All right, welcome aboard. It is time for episode 15 of the Cumming and Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles. What's going on? It's Pat Steinberg along with you, and we've got an absolute treat for you on this week's episode. Cumming and Gillespie LLP, personal injury and medical malpractice lawyers committed to getting maximum compensation for the injured and their families. Visit CummingGillespie.com. And on this week's episode, Terry Crisp, the only head coach to ever win a Stanley Cup with the Flames. He was in town recently, sat down with Brent Cron and Colin Patterson at the Garrison Pub to tell some great stories about that 1989 Stanley Cup run, his coaching career, his time as the color voice of the Nashville Predators, and a whole lot more. That is all coming your way on this week's episode in just minutes' time. But first, it's time for this week's edition of This Week in Flames History, brought to you by Village Honda. And this week, we're going back 11 years ago to June 27th of 2014.
The Calgary Flames are proud to select from the OHL Kingston, Sam Bennett.
Yeah, the Flames selected six players at the NHL draft in Philadelphia back in 2014, and with their first round pick, fourth overall, the highest ever selection in Calgary Flames history, they would select forward Sam Bennett from the Kingston Frontenacs of the OHL. We know it didn't go as well as Flames fans were hoping. When he was here in Calgary, he would go on to play 402 games with the Flames, recording 67 goals and 140 points, was then traded to the Florida Panthers, and we all know where things have gone from there. Three straight trips to the Stanley Cup Final, two Stanley Cups, and a Conn Smythe Trophy nod for Sam Bennett, and the Flames drafted him 11 years ago this week in Philadelphia, and that's This Week in Flames History, brought to you by Village Honda, your dealership for life in the Northwest Auto Mall. Well, honestly, as we get into the conversation now, it is Stanley Cup winning head coach in 1989, Terry Crisp, in conversation with Brent Cron and Colin Patterson. Honestly, we don't even need to set it up so much because Terry is such a talker. He is such a character, and he was basically interviewing the guys. Let's dive in. It is part one of this conversation with Terry Crisp.
Hello, coming at you. One, two, three, my melodious tones.
Oh, it's like I'm listening to Nashville Predators right now.
My melodious tones are coming over the airwaves.
Melodious. That's so good.
I can't wait to get into this one.
Did you always know you wanted to be a coach?
No, I never wanted to play hockey.
Yeah, why not?
I wanted to be a high school teacher.
What subject?
I didn't care. I just wanted to get paid for a high school teacher and have the summer off.
Oh, Christ. Yeah. Could you imagine the world now?
Holy smokes. No kidding. What about teaching?
Just got to ask first. Are we hot?
Oh, yeah.
We're good. We're good.
We're on?
Yeah.
Because the first thing they taught me when I went into the thing was, your mic is always hot, crispy. Oops.
Yeah.
Oops. Yeah.
We've had a couple
Thank
oops
you.
Here.
So teaching.
Why are you looking so amazing?
Well,
I look that stupid. I mean, teaching, coaching. Well, I couldn't have been a teacher right off the... This is not going to go well.
No.
All you people out there listening, I apologize right now for the two guys I'm sitting with.
We have preconceived notions. I got two daughters going in to be teachers in university. And I'm sitting here, and I'm having a great... Oh, pull up a chair.
As I'm sitting here, my son Jeffrey walks in, and my grandson Kale walks in.
Kale, the whole family.
Come on, buddy.
So please don't embarrass me, guys.
Any more than he has been.
All right, Crispy, where are you from?
I heard you ask Al Coates that. He didn't know. He went through eight little towns out in the country somewhere, which I didn't know either.
Yeah. Can you narrow it down for us?
Yes, I can. I can narrow it to all the people out there that I was born in the same town as a pretty good hockey player, and I'll give you... a hint for all the people out there wondering it. They said, not a goalie, not a forward, but as a defenseman.
Oh.
And I can tell you his number because I chased it. Every time I played against him, all I saw was the back of his jersey going by me. And his number 4. Yeah, it rhymes with...
Or? Oh,
good man. Good
I'm
man.
On today.
And you
I'm
were going the today. You were going the OR, but not OR.
Exactly.
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Now we give him credit for it.
Crispy, that was a town that you built, and he took it away from you.
Really. Yeah, but they had a big, great big billboards on the highway. Welcome to the town of Bobby Orr.
Oh.
And I had to have one of my old cousins go in, and on the back of the thing in a little black paint say, and Terry Crisp.
Yeah, we'll make exactly. a bench out of that.
Yeah. So good. Who was your favorite team growing up, hockey team?
I didn't have a hockey team. For some reason, I don't know why, being a Canadian boy, you're supposed to have one. But I did have a favorite player. And he played for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and he was the captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Teeter Kennedy. Ted Kennedy, and you're going to ask me why, and I couldn't give you a specific reason why. I just liked him as captain. I liked he was like a solid person every time I saw him. So growing up, I liked Teeter Kennedy. Oh, and another reason, in a town I moved to later, he had built a racetrack. So we got to know each other. Yeah.
Not often you hear that.
No.
That guy built a racetrack, not a hockey rink. Yeah. A racetrack.
Built a racetrack. Yeah,
that's awesome. Now, when did you start skating?
I think really I started skating when I was like 1 1/2.
Holy smokes.
Yeah. They didn't have me to fit very many of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No. I think I started skating when I was 14. And you're going to say, how'd you get where you were? And a kid like Stan Mikita.
His first one.
Thank you. I knew Patty was going to grab on Stan Mikita. Yeah. I'm like all the rest of you guys. We all started, heck, probably when you're old enough to stand on the, you guys wouldn't know the double runners.
Yeah,
but we do. Two blades?
Yeah. See what I mean? He's looking so amazed at me.
You know what? I know what they are, but I
saw
them in a museum
once. Sometimes I saw you play as a goalie, you should have had them on. Just joshing.
You know what? I didn't start skating until I was about eight or nine. It was actually when I started skating.
Let me ask you then. We're sitting here. Why did you want to be a goalie?
You know, Mike Vernon's glove save on Stan Smith in overtime. That's why I wanted to be a goaltender.
I'm going to cry. That one I wake
That's
up to.
That's why I didn't want to be a coach.
I wake up to that one in my nightmares. Him and Tony Tonti on a wraparound hit the post.
Yeah.
Well, you guys,
that.
Most of them forget that one.
Yep.
I do not forget it.
No.
But I do remember Pepe and Ott's combining for a pretty good goal. You're not saying anything, Patty.
Oh, no, it was a fabulous goal. Fabulous goal.
Yeah. Describe it.
You know what? It was... Pep in the corner working hard. Ott's going to the net. You know, Pep throwing it right off his blade, this blade of his skate. Ott's not even noticing it, and the puck going in the net. That's how good Pep was.
See,
you know, that's how accurate his passing was.
Mr. Patterson should be in politics because everybody said he kicked it in. But did you see how he just said it? No, didn't matter. We emptied the bench so fast they couldn't change their mind no matter what.
No video review, too, hey?
No.
They couldn't go back and look at it 16 times.
But it was deflected.
Yeah. Redirected.
Redirected.
Redirected. Nice. You can redirect it.
Great.
Oh, man. So that was my moment. Like, literally, that's why I became a goaltender. It was crazy. When did you know? You know, like you said, you're playing around your hometown, and you're starting to get good. You know, like you're starting to become a good player. At what point did you think that maybe you could do something with hockey?
You know what? I'm going to be very honest. I never thought I would be a hockey player. Like I told you earlier, I wanted to be a high school teacher. But I just kept playing. Like, first off, you get when you're lucky in minor hockey, you back then was AAA for a travel team. Yeah. So I got to be on Parry Sound. They only had one midget team, by the way. So I played... for the midgets and got to travel. Then one year we went down south to play in all Ontario. We lost to this team called St. Mary, just outside of Stratford, London. So I get a call from the guy down there the next little while here after my midget was over, saying, we want you to come down and play Junior B. So I said, okay, got nothing to do. They're gonna go to school. So I went down to St. Mary's to start to play Junior B. But we had a hiccup.
Can't wait to hear.
You didn't ask.
What was the hiccup, Chris?
I forgot we can ask questions now. And I said, because I went down, made the team, and stayed there for, I think, maybe a month. And, Cale, do you know what happened?
You got homesick. That's what you always tell me. You got homesick.
Homesick.
Yeah. They didn't cut me. And you know what? This is the funny...
I got homesick, went back, said married, and said, that's it, I'm done. I'm going to go to school and be a high school teacher. And then there was another great part of the story that follows that.
What is that, Crispy?
What is that story, Crispy?
I'm home in Parry Sound, back in my school, whatnot. I'm out with my buddies one night, and about 10 o'clock in the evening, my mom calls me and says, Terry, where are you? I said, over at Wayne Claremont's house. I said, what are you doing? She says, well, there's a gentleman here in our living room, and he wants to talk to you, and he wants to see you. I said, who is it? She says, it's Stan Moore. I says, tell him you can't hear, you didn't find me. I'm out on the phone. My mom says, you get your rear end home right now, and you tell him. So Stan Moore was the man who was running the St. Mary's team that beat us out in the All-Ontario. He was the man building that team. And when I went down, I said, okay, I'm coming. I come home. Stan Moore is sitting in my living room with two other players that he had gone up north to get for the same reason. This man said, before you say anything, start packing your suitcase. Just like that. Pack it. I said, well, I'm mom. She says, he's talking to you, not me. Yeah. So, Mr. Stan Moore.
And your mom was fine with all this?
My mom was fine because it was new. I want to. But I said, so I got in the car, 10 o'clock at night, back. The rest was all history. But to this day, people say, well, Crispy, you had a good career. Well, what do you think? What happened? What made your career? I said, I can tell you one name, Stan Moore. So they all say, Stan Moore. So I tell him this story about getting homesick, and Cale knows it and whatnot. And I said, why? I said, because every time I sit down and look across the table, or every time I travel to see my children and grandchildren, I thank Stan Moore. Because if that day, that night, at 10 o'clock at night, he doesn't demand I get in his car and go south, I'm not sitting here with you guys.
Yeah.
Because that man, I met my wife, got married, had children, had grandchildren. So that's, everybody looks for a thing, a great big monument. Okay. That was mine.
Wow. Cheers to Stan Moore.
Cheers Thank to Stan
you.
Moore.
Thank man. You.
Cheers. Yeah. That's an unbelievable story.
Yeah. And now we're joined by Cale Crisp, Crispy's grandson. One of Crispy's grandsons.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's
Don't embarrass me when they ask you a question.
Oh, no, never. Not once.
See, he's one of the ones, the smart ones. What do you... Well, every time we talk, I need hockey when I was at, I'd phone him. Cale, what's going on? What's happening? What's doing?
He's the stats man. He knows everything. Yeah.
So why do you know everything? Why are you doing it?
My brother's the stats guy. I'm just the messenger. I go through him.
Oh.
See, right now you don't get the job. Yeah. You are real bad.
That's Take credit it. For the work.
We're going to have a chat, Cale.
So, Crispy, you're playing Junior B in St. Mary's.
Yeah.
Who was on your team? Anybody?
No, just me. No. I was the team.
Yes.
Wow.
You know what? Carrying the mail.
You know what? And I can hear Al Coates out there saying, no, that's so stupid. Okay, cool. Nobody of notoriety, whoever went on, except that, yeah, I'm sorry, I apologize for that. Jean-Paul Parise.
Oh, and just him, JP.
Yeah, just JP Parise. Because one of my best buddies, and unfortunately died much too young. But yeah, he made it, and his sons came along and played the hockey they played. We had a goalie who could have made it, if you're listening, and you made it. For some reason, he didn't want to move and leave, but he was primo goalie. And then, I'll be honest, we had a guy, my best buddy, was on the team, forward. And he was the best player by far on our four team. He went to Major A in Hamilton, I think he went, when I went to Niagara Falls. And guess what he got? Homesick.
Guess what
happened? He went home and never...
Nobody came back. For him.
And he would have been the major hockey player coming off that team.
Isn't that crazy how that works? You know what? For myself, like, my first year playing with the Hitmen, I remember going home for Christmas and spending 7 days at home with my family and friends and my cousins and everything like that, and I'd been gone for 3 months, and I was so happy to be home and have home cooking and have my parents there and my brother and my family that when I got back, we were playing the Lethbridge Hurricanes the next night, and I remember calling my dad. I was at the South Center Mall here in Calgary. I called my dad. I'm like, Dad, like, I think, like, I'm having a tough time here. I really missed home. I want to come home. And he's like, you can come home whenever you want. He goes, but before you make your decision, you got to go play a couple games first. You can't just live off this field. And I remember getting a shutout in Lethbridge that night, and I never looked back. It was crazy.
Did you thank your dad?
Absolutely. A million times out of... I called... Well, there was no cell phone. Well, there was. I didn't have one. But as soon as I got back...
It's called a phone booth. What's a phone booth, Dad?
Hashtag look it up, millennials.
It was only 2 hours away. So when I got home, whatever it was, at mid, 1 o'clock in the morning, I called them and said that was just the best advice I got at that time.
Well,
right?
How about you then? How did you get into it?
You know, same thing, Crispy. I had sort of quit hockey in my first year midget. I was pretty small, got cut by a bunch of teams, didn't want to drop down a level. So two guys came to my place to talk me into playing midget A. Midget AA was the top thing. Pat Bannon and Ken Lemke. And I'll never forget those guys coming in. My parents, same sort of thing. You know, they want to come talk to you. And I said, well, you know, I don't really want to talk to them, but My parents said the same thing. They want to see you. They want to talk to you. And that was, you know, for me, it was like, come play a game. And if you don't like it, then that's all right. But I went and played one game, and I went, it's fun.
Yeah. I'm going to shake your hand because you had a Stan Moore, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Go,
Patty.
I think we all have a Stan Moore somewhere, right?
The bug, yeah. Like your dad did.
Yeah.
Play a few games. Then decide.
Decide. Yeah. Don't just give in, right? Yeah. You just go try it, and if it doesn't work.
Just flip of the coin, turn of the wheel, and here you are.
Jeez.
Yeah. I mean, in today's game, there's scouts everywhere. There's all the technology. And watch players play without even being there. You know, you think of yourself, how do you end up in Niagara Falls? And what was the system back in the day? Because they didn't have a draft,
It was terrible. No draft, no nothing. And the NHL teams could buy the junior teams. So the Boston Bruins owned the Westminster Bruins. They owned the Oshawa Generals.
They owned Bobby Orr.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They owned Niagara Falls. And they had one other Quebec League team.
Yeah.
And every NHL team could do that. Like Detroit owned Hamilton for one of the ones I know. Toronto had the Marlies. They had another. Anyways, the NHL teams owned them. And this is the really dumb part of your word. I was a kid from the country. And when I finished my junior career, 20 years old, no draft. So at 20 years old, I was junior A, Niagara Falls, belonged to Boston. Well, guy comes and said, Crispy, we want you to come to training camp for the Boston Bruins here. Okay, what? Well, no. He said, well, here, I want you to sign this card. I said, what is it? He said, it's a C card. I said, a C card? He said, yeah. He said, you get $100 from us if you sign the C card. I said, $100? He says, yeah. So I said, okay. So I signed the C card. I get $100. You know what that C card was? They owned me forever.
I know.
I belonged to the Boston Bruins. So every kid back then that was a junior player, and if they weren't smart enough, parents that knew about a C card, or an agent at the time that maybe might have known about a C card, for $100, the NHL team owned you. So I belonged to the Boston Bruins. The only team I could go to training camp with their permit was the Boston Bruins.
Wow. So how'd you, like, for Niagara Falls, though, how'd you end up there? Like,
from St. Mary's. They owned St. Mary's.
They owned St. Mary's.
They also had junior B teams that was for it, and we were affiliate?
Yeah.
We were affiliated with them. And so they would watch us, and then as soon as my first 2 years junior B, I was 16 and 17, whatever it was, they come and say, we want you to come up to Niagara Falls and play junior A. I said, okay, good. But it was like, you know what it was? I never, like I told you when we started, I was never going to be a hockey player.
Yeah.
I never had a dream I'm going to be a hockey player. Everybody always says that.
Yeah, for sure.
No, I wasn't. It just happened that, okay, I got a chance to play Major A. Then I went to Boston, went to their camp 4 years in a row. This is back when. Made the team, got a place to live. Played one game maybe, sat on the bench for a month, then went to the minors.
Yeah.
And that was like a groundhog day for me. Next year, went to camp, made the team, played maybe one game. And I like the stats. And every time I tell my stats, my grandchildren, Kale sitting right there, they look up. The worst thing that ever happened to me was Google. I was thinking, and what would you, what would you do, Kale?
We called you out one time, and you said you played like four games with Boston 1 year, whatever it was. So my brother and I were sitting at home. We Google it, and we Google how much time he played. didn't play a second in any of the games.
Doesn't mean you didn't play.
Doesn't mean you didn't play.
Back then when you sat on the bench, it counted as a game.
It still counted.
Never knew that. It counted. See, Kale, it counted as a game. So if you look over my stats, I've only played 3 games for the Boston. Anyways, we kept going to the
minors.
But
watched a lot.
And I got to give you a real quick story, and kudos to all the ladies out there. I think it was my third year going into pro, and I was met Sheila, and we're getting married. And so I said, okay. I said, I'm done. I'm going now. I'm going to go back to school. So we got married. I'm going to go back to school. And my wife says to me, you're what? I said, I'm going back to school. And she says, I don't know. I'm going to say what she says. Like hell you are. She says, we're going to Boston and to wherever, Oklahoma. All I hear for the rest of my life be, well, I could have been a pro hockey player, and I could have made it, and I was good enough to be in the bigs, but I got married and had children and had it. She says, that's not going to happen.
Good for her.
I went to Oklahoma City that year. It was my last year of the, and unbeknownst to anybody, me, the NHL went from 6 to 12 teams that final year. And I was the captain of Oklahoma, had my best year ever, being married with Sheila and whatnot. And
you can look that up, right, Kale?
Absolutely.
Am I right or am I right?
You're right. I'll take your word for
so
it.
So we got drafted. I got drafted by St. Louis because Boston obviously did not protect me. And we keep saying, I love this phrase, the rest is history.
Yeah.
We went and moved. But again, there was nothing that I had monumental dream about. It just flowed.
What were you making your first year? What was your contract?
$3,000.
If you played in the NHL?
First year of pro. No, yeah. Oh. I never got to them, but they knew it. But Hap M's $3,000. But the next year I went really big. I went
$3,500.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Goals. But then the next year I go back, and the guy, the GM, I won't say his name, says Crispy.
Say his name, because he's probably not around, I would assume.
No, he's gone.
Yeah.
But it wasn't fair to his family. Yeah. He says, come into Crispy, I got to cut you $500. I'm only making $3,500. What do you? He said, well, remember last year you missed a month because you had a hernia and an appendectomy. I said, yeah, at the same time. And I was in the hospital and missed a month. He says, that's it. We've got to cut. I says, that ain't going to. He says, no. So I got mad. He finally didn't cut me. I got the $3,500.
Oh. You could let Sheila lose one hand. Oh, man, that would have been something.
What was the recovery time on the appendectomy there, Chris? I've had one, too. I was out for about 2 to 4 weeks or so, and then I was back.
The whole total thing was a month.
Yeah.
But I had to go back. We were in Oklahoma City, and I went to Parry Sound and got the operations and whatnot, then came back down again and whatnot, et cetera. So, but it's just, back then it was just, that's the way it is. That's hockey.
Yeah, absolutely. You won a championship, too, in Oklahoma City, didn't you, down there?
We had 2 championships, I believe. I'm not sure. How did we do in Oklahoma?
I think you guys won once and lost in the finals at one point. I could be wrong.
Have you ever went over our lineup, the 2 years in Oklahoma City? We had guys that were like Bernie Perrant.
Yeah.
Who was the other? Bernie Perrant, another guy. Jerry Cheevers.
Yeah.
We had Wayne Cashman. We had Glenn Sather. We had...
I was going to say Glenn Sather because I was going to get to that at some point here, too.
Glenn was on there. We had a loaded team. I mean, Dallas Smith. You go over the Boston Bruins lineup.
They're all
Joey
the
Watson,
NHL guys.
Yeah. And we were loaded. Loaded for bear.
And where did you fit into that club? Where were you slotted? What line were you on? Who were your line mates?
I don't even know. It's too far back. Don't ask guys that far back, okay? Please?
Yeah.
I know yesterday I had freaking cereal for breakfast.
Don't ask him what type. Yeah.
But I did know I had Jean-Paul Parisi on my left side.
Yeah.
So I
was great.
Your best friend. Yeah.
Yes.
Good friend.
And we were good. But it's just, it's amazing how it flows.
Yeah.
And then I went to St. Louis. It was good. Great. Always good there, too.
You had a brief run-in with Harry Sinden, too, didn't you, in Boston?
Harry Sinden was my coach for 4 years.
Yeah.
He was a playing coach. What a great man.
Yeah.
What a great person, family man. So in Oklahoma City, when we went down there for them, Harry Sinden had, I believe, 2 daughters, pretty girls. So when I went to Oklahoma City,
Sheila and I babysat the daughters whenever he needed it.
Hey, you've got to stay in the team. Patty, whatever turns your crank, you turn the crank.
I know when to babysat your kids.
Thank you, Sheila.
All right, we are just getting started with this week's conversation with 1989 Stanley Cup winning head coach Terry Crisp as we continue on this week's episode. We'll get back to the conversation with Terry in just a few minutes, but first it's time for this week's edition of Flames Trivia, brought to you by OSY Rentals. Make the best use of your oil field production budget. OSY's Vapor Tight package comes with everything required downstream of the wellhead. Call 1-855-OSY-TANK, and we will have a Terry Crisp themed question for you. So Terry was the head coach of the Flames for three seasons between 1987 and 1990. He was fired after the 1989-1990 season. So Crisp succeeded Badger Bob Johnson as Calgary's head coach. So Badger Bob Johnson came before Terry Crisp. I need to know what head coach came immediately after Terry Crisp. Who was the head coach that came after Terry Crisp in Calgary Flames history? Give you a few seconds to come up with the answer. Okay, the answer to this week's trivia question, see if you got this one. Doug Risebrow, who would go on to coach parts of the next two seasons for the Flames. He would actually step away from being head coach and focus just on being general manager partway through his second season. But Doug Risebrow was the head coach immediately following Terry Crisp. And that is this week's edition of Flames Trivia, brought to you by OSY Rentals. Okay, it's Pat Steinberg along with you on this week's edition of the program. The Cumming and Gillespie LLP, Flames Alumni Chronicles, Cumming and Gillespie LLP, personal injury and medical malpractice lawyers committed to getting maximum compensation for the injured and their families. Visit CummingGillespie.com. And this program available on the Flames Talk podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts. And it continues more of Terry Crisp around the corner. All right, we are continuing along with this week's edition of the Cumming and Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles. It's Pat Steinberg along with you on the Flames Talk podcast feed. Cumming and Gillespie LLP, personal injury and medical malpractice lawyers committed to getting maximum compensation for the injured and their families. Visit CummingGillespie.com. And we will get back to the conversation with this week's guest of honor, the one and only Terry Crisp, in conversation with Colin Patterson and Brent Cron. We'll get back to it in just a second. But first, it's time for this week's edition of Where Are They Now, brought to you by Pure Chem Services. And this week, we're catching up with former Flame Doug Gilmore, who played 266 games as a member of the Flames, won the Stanley Cup in 1989, played over 1,400 NHL games as a whole. Now, after his playing career, Gilmore entered player development for a couple years with the Maple Leafs, then spent 11 years with the Kingston Frontenacs in the OHL, spent 3 years as head coach and 8 years as general manager. Now an ambassador with the Toronto Maple Leafs, very involved with nonprofit work as well. Doug Gilmore this week on Where Are They Now, brought to you by Pure Chem Services, the expertise to realize higher production and lower costs. Okay, back to the conversation we go, and it's just more of great storytelling with Terry Crisp, who won the Stanley Cup as head coach of the Calgary Flames in 1989, in conversation with Brent Cron and Colin Patterson. Let's get back to it right now.
But you ask all the kids that went back in those days, the minor leagues were... They didn't pay a lot and they were tough, but you just played.
Yeah. Bust around.
Yep. And then we finally got to fly on those DC-3s. I think it's a plane DC-3, I think it is.
There's no blimp. Did you get
to take a blimp? There's no heat and no air.
The blimp was busy. They couldn't have a blimp.
But, okay, all the people out there listening, a DC-3 is probably the safest plane that was ever built, ever made, never flew. But when you're in there, and you're flying from one to another, when you went to get up, your feet were frozen to the floor of the DC-3.
Would you? I mean, you'd fly the day of the game? Is that how that would work? Or
oh, yeah.
Yeah. You did
none of this going in the early in the hotel. It costs money.
No team so, chef. Yeah. No nothing.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, what did you eat?
White Castle. Oh, yeah.
Burgers. Two
Great
things.
Burgers, too, by the way. Like White Castle back then was two things. It was my thing for to made me go to play hockey, and it made me go to the bathroom.
Keep you light. Hey, keep you light on your skates.
Onions. Yeah. Always good.
You've been there, haven't you? You've been to White Castle.
Crispy, do you remember what the per diem was?
$8 a day per diem. I laughed. Per diem now is like my salary. More than my salary.
Yeah, you can retire on it.
Yeah. And when I first went and signed a contract one time, real quick, when I got back into the TV end of it, and I was signing my contract, and they were saying, well, okay, the per diem, Crispy, you know, you have to, I wasn't per diem, I was TV. And they said, you got to put in your chits every trip, your studs from wherever. I said, hey, I'm a bad bookkeeper. I lose everything. I don't keep track of it. They said, oh, I said, no, do me a favor, will you? I'm getting old. Just whatever the players make per day, give to me. Best, smartest move I ever made. Because I started, I think, about like when it was like maybe $18 or $21 a player. Guess what it was when I ended up getting per day? You first.
120 bucks a day.
We'll say 150.
Sorry, what was the question?
Never mind, you're out of here now. What was per diem when I played pro?
100 bucks.
Oh, when you played pro. I thought you were just doing the color for Nashville.
That's when it was. I was fooling him.
Oh, okay.
You missed it by five. It was 125.
Wow.
Yeah. Imagine. But you know what? It's like everything else. The game escalated, the money, it should too. But it's just little things you remember.
Gets you a lot of beer.
Yeah. I might become an agent. Is it too old?
Never too late. Never too late.
Oh.
You had Scotty Bowman as a coach there, didn't you?
Oh, I sure did. You know what? Real quickly, I don't know how many, but you got to get this in for me. My whole hockey career, I loved it, played it. There was a lot of wonderful guys, wonderful teams. But I was blessed when I got a chance to play for two coaches. First off, Scotty Bowman and St. Louis Blues for, I think, 7 years, maybe six, 7 years. And then my second go-around was Fred Shiro in Philadelphia. And everything I did after St. Louis, Philadelphia, was geared for what Fred Shiro and Scotty Bowman taught me both on and off the ice, both about practices, and they're both polar opposites. And I think that's what helped me a lot of my coaching was that I had Scotty one thing and Freddie another. And that's what took me on my coaching career.
What, I mean, everybody knows who Scotty Bowman is, legendary Scotty Bowman. What were practices like with him? What did he expect? Can you remember a few maybe?
Perfection.
Yeah.
But I got one great thing, and they should use it today, and the players should listen, and the coaches should listen to me. That we used to practice, and you won't believe this, line changes. Line changing in scrimmage. We would have four colors out there. I'll go real quickly. Let's say black ones, white shirt, gold shirt, and blue shirts. We would have a full-fledged scrimmage going, and Scotty would sit up in the stands, and he had a whistle for blue, a horn for yellow, a shrill something for the four different sounds that he would hit up there and while in the middle of the scrimmage. And if he hit your, say we were the whistle and I'm red and he hit the whistle, the red unit had to change on the fly and don't screw it up. Because if you did, he's coming down to the ice. And people look at me like I'm crazy. Best thing I ever saw. Watch the games today. As a coach, lollygagging drives me nuts. And I totally do not like lollygagging on it. You know why? Because Colin will tell you as a player and whatnot, you're lollygagging off the ice.
Where else are you lollygagging, right?
You're screwing me up because I'm going on the ice because you're going to come here. I have to jump on, and they're already gone into my zone, and you lollygagged all the way off. Am I right or am I right?
You are absolutely right, Crispy, especially in today's game with no red line. I mean, you're lollygagging. There's a puck going right up. And a lot of people probably listening don't understand that. when we had the red line in for two line passing, it would have been offside. You know, it was a little easier then. Now it's a lot tougher.
I liked it because now you had to have skill to get out of your own zone and through the center ice zone. You don't know. Skill, I come around behind my net and blast the puck.
Yep.
The guy up the far thing tips it in. They get the puck and come back down. They get in, they blast it down.
Can you imagine all kinds of chaos that would happen if they brought the two-line pass back in?
Oh, well, you know why? They'd have to learn how to play.
Yeah.
It'd be more of a skill game.
Okay, so whose fault is it? Too many men on the ice? Is it coaches or players' fault?
Players.
Players.
Yeah, the coaches. Hey, are you kidding me? You're right. I still want a coach, you know. I'm still looking for a job. I don't know, because I'm just saying I don't know other coaches. But when I was on the bench, ask Colin, you knew who was up, unless it was McLean.
Yeah. Poor McLean got which was a bit of an issue.
Yeah, it was. who was McLean?
Well, why don't we tell that story again, now that we're on the air?
Brian McClellan?
Yeah. You know what? I'll start her off, and I'll let you jump in, Crispy. So we trade Perry Barzan for Brian McClellan. It's right at the trade deadline in 1989. Brian McClellan comes, big guy, you know, good player. Really sad to see Perry go, but Brian comes in, and he's sitting on the bench. We're in Winnipeg, and Crispy is screaming. What were you screaming?
What did you say?
I was saying, the lineup. McLean, you're up. And he's sitting there looking out. Closer. McLean, you're up. He doesn't move. So I walked down behind him.
Yeah, so I finally jumped in as voice of reason. I go, I said, Brian, he means you. And he goes, well, it's not my name. I go, it doesn't matter.
He means you. Yeah.
He means you. And it wasn't like we didn't have the names on the back of our jersey.
Right, you could read those. Yeah, right, it's read tough. Those.
at the time, there was a guy, Denny McLean, who was a baseball player who was caught in racketeering. So this guy's, Brian McClellan's name instantly became Denny. Denny McLean. So this goes on for how many games, Crispy? Like four games?
Yeah. But finally, Colin goes, oh, okay. But the one time he says to me, I go down and say, McLean. He looks just very casually and quietly, looks over his shoulder and says, my name's not McLean. I got to go to my sister and go, what's his name?
Who is this guy?
You're up. Now we have too many men. Now we have too many men.
That's so good.
And I hope Big Macker's laughing at this.
Oh,
please.
Yeah, he would
forgive
be.
Me.
He would be.
Your goalie in St. Louis, too. Who's that, Glenn Hall?
Glenn Hall and Jacques Plante.
Yeah.
How's that?
Can you imagine that?
I was going over this on the weekend, and I was just blown away. I love looking at that. We had Doug Barkley on here a couple times ago, and, you know, he had Terry Sawchuk for a goaltender, right? And he was roommates with Gordie Howe, and you're listening to these stories of icons. And, you know, what was it like playing with two legendary goaltenders, two Hall of Famers?
First off, you have to get over being in awe. Because this is Glenn
Hall. Did you ever hit one of them in the head with a shot in practice?
You kidding? My
Unless
shot wouldn't hurt anybody.
Unless somebody deflected it and whacked it.
Take your hand off and catch it barehanded. Yeah. My shot, yeah. I'll tell you. Yeah. Real quickly, Dougie Favelle, we had him in Philly, and he got traded to Toronto. He comes back, and they ask him, okay, you're playing against your old team. Whose shot do you hurt? Are you afraid of the worst? McLeish, Barber, DuPont, whose shot scares you the most? He says, well, I can tell you what. I don't know who's one, but he says, the one I'm not afraid of the most is Crispy's. So I used to take my catching glove off and catch it. So Glenn Hall and Jacques Plante, they were two different moods, really, honest to God. But when Glenn joined us, we go to, and he was Chicago Blackhawks, you all remember. So we go in to play our first game I'm with Glenn in Chicago, warm-ups. And the one thing you didn't do back then was if you went in for your shot on your goalie in warm-ups and the puck started to bobble, you don't shoot. You do not fire that puck, unlike today where they aim for the head.
Mm. So I know all about it,
Crispy. I'm coming in and the puck bobbles on me. And I get in close. And I didn't mean to, but I made a deke and put it in the net. Now, this is in Chicago. Glenn's back in Chicago from being a hero. That hero. Okay. We go home, next practice, next day, we're in practice. I'd come down to shoot, and Glenn would step out of the net. We'd be thinking he'd step out of the net. Every time I shot the puck at the net, Glenn Hall stepped out of the net. So about three-quarters of the way through practice, says, Mr. Hall, I said, I know what you, why are you doing that? What are you? He says, you know why I'm doing it. I says, I don't know why you're doing it. Why are you doing this? He says, remember Chicago? I says, no, yeah. Warm-ups? You deked me and made me look foolish. You never, ever do that to your goaltender. Ever. Lesson learned, I never deked again in a warm-up in my life. Now, go one step further, and you know this, in practice today, they're going over the goalie's head, over the shoulder, because where they do, oh, put it high in the corner. Yeah. Billy Smith. I played with him in New York Islanders. He was my goalie. I love him. Battling Billy. Yeah. Loved him. We had another player, our captain guy, that always fired high at his head. And Billy told him, one more, and I'm coming at you. And the guy was cocky. He comes in and wires it. Billy Smith takes the stick and chases him all around the friggin' ice. This is true. True. Chases him. And the trainer opens the door for the guy, and the guy goes right through into the dressing room, or Billy Smith would have knocked him out with his goal stick. So kids out there, you learn, don't make a fool of your goaltenders.
I appreciate that.
Well, you should, because you never stop very many. Well, just Josh. Oh, I go, come on.
Just trying to get out of the way.
Well, that hurts. That's really, even I'm embarrassed now with that.
Mix it a save.
Not so much.
Did you give Vernie a hard time, too? Did you tell him that, too?
Vernie a hard time. Vernie was Vernie. I told Colin real quick. Mike Vernon was what he was, and he loved the game and loved life. And when we won the cup the one night in Montreal, we win the cup, and it's all great and all good. And I had a wonderful, wonderful bunch of guys. I was blessed with that team, the coach. But I never watched the game for a couple of years. It was all on video. So one night I was with my wife, and I said, she said, why don't you watch it? I said, well, I don't really sat down and watched it. I was telling Colin this earlier. When the game was over, I said to Sheila, I have to phone Mike Vernon and tell him and compliment and apologize. I didn't realize how disciplined that man was, Mike Vernon, in that game. They run him, they slew-footed him, they speared him. No calls against him, none whatsoever. And Vernon never lost his cool. He stayed on the line, on the mark. I didn't realize it until I watched it on video. And I phoned Mike and said, I want to thank you.
Yeah.
I didn't realize what they did to you and the discipline you showed.
It's remarkable. I remember watching old tape of goalies getting... I mean, there was one in particular, too, where Vernie went out to go play the puck, and he just got absolutely railroaded, buried into the corner, and just got back up and went back into the net and just carried on like nothing happened.
I think it was Claude Lemieux that kept slew-footing him.
Yeah.
And then the other guy kept running him. And no calls back in this game, but again, that was a different era.
Wow. Just back to St. Louis a little bit, too. You also played with Al Arbor, didn't you?
Yep, he was our captain.
Yeah.
He was the guy, the first man I ever saw that wore glasses in the game and no mask. And he wore glasses while he was playing. And he had a strap around the one side, around the back, which you see now every time. They all have them dangling from their neck all over, like the straps. He could have made a fortune. If he had trademark?
Yeah.
Al Arbor, love him, God. But he just, and every time he came off the ice, you'd see him take his glasses off and take a Kleenex or that and rub, you know, you rub your, if you have glasses and they're all fingerprints and that, every shift. And he blocked shots then. Blocked shots with no chest. We're playing Bobby Hull one night in Chicago. Bobby Hull. Golden Jet that could shoot razor. And he was blocked. We come in one night after the game, and he was in the shower. Al was. We looked, and he had an imprint of the puck where Bobby Hull hit him. A perfect brown imprint.
It said Czechoslovakia on it.
Whatever. CCM official, puck. Yeah. CCM official. Puck or whatever it was. And we said... And he had no fear. None. He was away. These guys all block him now, and they go like... Al Arbor was him and Bobby Plager.
were the forerunners I've ever seen of guys blocking shots.
Did you have the three Plager brothers there?
Pardon me?
Yeah.
Yep. Billy, Bark, and Bob. Yeah. All three. That was a circus.
Oh,
a wonderful circus.
They didn't bring their race cars to the game or nothing like that, did they?
No. Well, they probably had a set, and I didn't know about it.
So how did you
get the machine took my quarter.
Yeah, none of that stinking root beer. So how did you get from St. Louis to New York?
When the team, they had another two teams come in that year. What the heck, what year was it?
1972.
72. They went from, two new teams came in, the Islanders and Atlanta. And St. Louis could only hold, you can only protect so many. St. Louis didn't protect me. I was getting up in age and average player. And they drafted me. The Islanders drafted me in their entry draft.
So Glenn Hall told him that you deked him in the warm-up, and he said, enough.
Yeah.
Done.
No. Glenn Hall said, take me with him. Yeah. I love Glenn for that. But that's how I went to the Islanders and got, two-thirds of a season there. But what the people don't know is, for my ability and whatnot, I got traded from the Islanders to Philadelphia for Potvin.
Denny Potvin?
Yeah, for Potvin. Well, remember he was
Potvin.
Oh, yeah.
You notice what I said?
Yeah.
What did I say?
I like that.
Who was the brother?
Jean.
Oh.
Jean Potvin. Oh, but I don't tell people that. Eh? Oh, yeah. And they say, what? I said,
come on. I don't tell many people that.
I bit the hook.
Yeah. I should know better. I should know better.
I love that.
Bag of pucks.
Yeah. Now you're bragging.
Yeah. Crispy, who was coaching in the island?
Phil Goyette started. And then Phil Goyette.
Did you play with him in St. Louis?
Yes. Yeah. He was there. We had a lot of ex-Montreal because Scotty Bowman brought in a lot of good guys in. But Phil didn't like it. He didn't want to coach, and he knew that to begin with. And Jerry Eamon took over partway through. So we could. Well, we only won 12 games when I was there.
Yeah.
Then they got even got worse. But I always laugh when I got traded at the deadline. From the Islanders to Philly. And for some reason, some crazy reason, they had it at midnight, the trade deadline, when I made my luckiest move ever made for them, when they traded me to Philly.
Yeah.
And we're in Detroit playing at the Lindell AC Club, and you know that, because that was the hangout for the players, to have beers after the game and safe and et cetera. So it's the last day of trading deadline, midnight. We're in the bar at about, I don't want to say, 11:15, because the game over, and then I'm one of the veterans, so I said, you believe this or not? My round, guys, I'm buying.
I don't believe it.
I know you're going to scoff at me.
So I said, We made it.
We don't have to move our family. You don't have to move our kids. No excuse. Get it? I'm walking to the bar, and the bar phone rings. And the bartender said, hey, is there a crisp here? And I said, that's me. Phone for you.
They knew where you were.
It was our coach. Well, sure they did. It was a given. You're not lost there.
It was a curfew? No curfew?
No, curfew. Oh, that's a bad word.
That's a horrible word.
So he said, yeah, Crispy, come on. Where are you? Yes, you know where I am. You phoned you for crying out loud. He said, come on back to the hotel. I said, no. I want to talk to you. I said, just tell me where I'm going. Just tell me. No, come on back. I said, no. I'm buying around. I'm going to have my last beer with these guys together. Tell me where I'm going. He said, we just traded you to Philadelphia. I says, you traded me to Philadelphia? He says, yeah. I says, what does Philadelphia want with me? He says, I'll be damned if I know.
Yeah, we're taking this deal.
Yeah. Yeah, whatever it is.
Yeah, you're out of here. Yeah.
Nice. I really felt good.
Did you pay for the beers, Crispy, or just leave?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
We had another round back.
Yeah.
I was heading out the door.
All that per diem, he was raking in back then. He could pay for everything.
Yeah.
Right?
Then you have to say, oh, Sheila. We're moving again. Huh?
Yeah. Well, they probably figured that Philly didn't get enough penalty minutes with Dave Schultz and Bob Kelly, right? They probably wanted to bring you in.
Oh, Freddie Shiro. Yeah. You like that one, don't you? When I first went in, met Freddie, and had a meeting, he says, Crispy, you know that we are not all created equal, and we will not all be treated equal, and you will not get the same ice time as Bobby Clark. I said, why not?
Yeah, what's wrong with you?
Why not? What's wrong? Don't you know?
Yeah.
I said, well, he said, we got you for your defensive play, defensively for a defensive unit, and to kill penalties. You're one of the, anyways. So I said, end of story. I got more time than Bobby Clark. I'm a penalty killer.
You went to the right team, eh?
Oh, Crispy, when you had to move, what happened? Like, did you guys switch places or did you?
Yeah, Pot Van had a big house in there, and we had a nice home in the island. So my wife and I and the kids moved to Pot Van's big house.
Was that normal? Like, was it, if you got traded for each other, would you just, is that how that would work?
I don't know. Normal, we did it because we didn't, it was only like a month left in the regular season or something, whatnot. But this house was an old house. And we went there, my wife, God bless Sheila for this. And he was a bachelor, single man.
Mm.
So he didn't care about the house. The couches had rips in them, tears in them. Looked at one end of it, little nice little mouse's nest over here.
Oh.
The back shed had stuff running around. You didn't want to know what it was around. So Sheila says, season ended. She says, we're going to New Jersey to live on the other side of the river. So you guys ever have any women on yet?
No, we have not.
No.
I'm telling you.
Oh, yeah. They're the best stories.
Like, you got to bring the women in on this, because if you ever got two of them,
because they'll actually tell the story correctly.
Yeah. Who? No, they tell the truth.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It would be hilarious.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. But people always say to me, okay, your career, you had a good career, Christian. I said, yeah, I did. Good. They said, if you would tell people, what would make their career the best for them? And this is simple. Find a good woman, marry her, and keep her.
Yeah.
And that's my thing. For everything I own and have and done, the power behind the throne, thank you, Sheila.
Oh, attaboy. Good on you.
The truth.
So you were, we were talked about Scotty Bowman and his ingenuity, and, you know, one of the things you remember is his line changes and all that creativity. You get to Philly, you have Fred Shiro, and you said they were two different kinds of coaches. What did you learn from Fred?
Scotty told you what it was. Scotty told us what it was. Fred said, you figure it out for yourself. He would present the problem, you figure it out. Scotty gave you the answer, and you live by it, and it's successful also. Freddie made the players think, and I'll give you a quick real thing. One day we're practicing, Freddie calls us, and he says, okay, turn your sticks over. So turn your sticks over, put the knob of the stick on the ice. Okay, understand? Okay, let's go. Breakouts. So we're practicing breakouts. Now visualize this, people, you're on radio. You're doing a practice, shooting, passing with the knob of your stick. Every drill. So we go on. After about whatever, Bobby Clark had enough. He goes up to Freddie at center ice. He says, Freddie, this is the dumbest, the stupidest, the most asinine thing we've ever done. And you know, Freddie, he pushes the glasses up and he looks at his watch and he said, yep. And it took one of you geniuses 12 minutes to figure it out.
So that was Freddie.
Yeah.
Like, the one, my favorite story about Fred Shiro, the different coaches come in and we were playing the Boston Bruins on a Sunday afternoon. If we win that game, we win the cup in our building. And it's a heck of a hockey game, obviously they all are. And we're ahead,
1-0 at the end of the second. And Freddie's our guru. He's our man. Let us hear. So we go in the room, and now Freddie always comes in with, you know, like 4 minutes. Does nothing long, nothing ever. So we're all sitting. The clocks come down. We thought, well, this is about 6 minutes, 4 minutes, no Freddie, 2 minutes, no Freddie. We know we've got to go on the ice. He walks in. He walks up to the blackboard. And most of you, explain what a blackboard was to your kids in chalk, please, out there.
I used to have to clean chalk brushes after school.
That was because you were bad. And that was a penalty.
I volunteered, yeah.
Teacher pet. Anyways, Freddie stands. Yeah. He comes in. He walks in the dressing room, and the blackboard's at one end, and we're all at the other. He turns his back, picks up the chalk, reaches for the blackboard. And he doesn't move for a few seconds. He puts the chalk back down, turns around, looks at the dressing room. He went around the room and looked every player in the eye. Every player, he stopped at and looked him in the eye, went around the whole room, and walked out. And walked out of the room. It's the greatest speech I never heard. When we left that dressing room, we were walking this high off the thing because what had he just done? What had Freddie just done?
He just empowered you to be a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm taking it as far as I can take you. Yeah. No words from me are going to change, guys. You want it?
You
go get it.
Yeah.
We beat Bobby Orr, Phil Esposito, and that whole squad 1-0 thanks to Bernie Perrant and a team effort.
Wow.
You're crying, aren't you?
I'm pumped up. That pumps me up.
Fired up.
Yeah, you know?
Crispy, what I want to know is, after that game, you guys win the cup, did they flip the sign around in Perry Sound so they showed your name on the
Never.
Back of it?
I'm still going by.
Yeah. And they painted over the black spray painted the back. Great. They got rid of it.
Wow.
Well, that was a lot of fun. Hey, 1989 Stanley Cup winning head coach Terry Crisp. We weren't even planning on having him as part of the program, but all of a sudden he was in town. Colin Patterson said, hey, we got to get him down to the Garrison Pub, and we did just that, and we got some great stories, didn't we? Outstanding stuff. Thanks to Terry Crisp. Thanks to Brent Cron. Thanks to Colin Patterson. Another edition of the Cumming and Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles in the books. Cumming and Gillespie LLP, personal injury and medical malpractice lawyers committed to getting maximum compensation for the injured and their families. Visit CummingGillespie.com. You can get this program on the Flames Talk podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts, and we will talk to you on next week's episode.